702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DSTV channel 856.
6 minutes past eight. Good evening and welcome to the business slash advice show. You are with Wasanga Man. We'll be together for the next 2 hours or so, talking everything that includes Christmas decorations, food, favorite and unfavorite uncles and aunts as well. But we'll be kicking off our discussion with Jess White, who's a director and founder of a Coombe agency. And we'll be talking about having Christmas away from home. It can be a very lonely time indeed. And I just want to talk about the end of the year, and if there's any special person, organization, or people who've really been at your side, who've supported you over and above the call of duty, why not appreciate them live on air? You can call in or send a voice note if you are a bit shy. So I think it's a nice gesture if you'd like to just mention that person and what they did for you, because I think it takes courage to have empathy, and to a certain extent those people almost do it so consistently. You're always welcome on the open line on 011-883-0702, as well as your SMSs are appreciated on 31702, your voice notes on WhatsApp as well on 072-702-1702. Keep it clean, please. It's a family show, as one of my former favorite rappers used to like to say. And you can send through those voice notes as well. Can be a bit intimidated in calling in. We've had heard some wonderful conversations from John's show and the various listeners who've been on there. If you're switching off and you're trying to just get away off, I think a lot of people are going home this period time of the year, and Christmas itself. We're talking 7 colors, meals to try out at 20 minutes past 6. Don't miss that. And then at 21 minutes before 7, still in the first hour, we talk to Masibulele Mkhundla, who's a lecturer and fitness fanatic and also social media influencer. It's not too easy keeping fit during this time of the year. He'll be giving us some tips there. And then we catch up with Berita, who is a SAMA award-winning singer and songwriter. We're talking about we'll be talking about her real homecoming on the 28th of December and her journey as an artist and the various lessons that she's learned and she can share as well. You know, it's been a tough time for artists. And then we're talking about the history of Christmas. Have you ever wondered where it comes from and where exactly the inspiration behind Father Christmas comes from? We've got Dr. Divine Fu, who's a social anthropologist and director of Huma Institute for Humanities in Africa at the University of Cape Town. So if you've ever had those questions about what does Christmas really mean from an African context or from whatever context, you're welcome in to tune in. That's Dr. Divine Fu at 27 minutes before 8 in the second hour.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Jess White joins us on the line. She's the director and founder of a Coombe agency, talking about having Christmas away from home. Quite a lonely prospect, Jess. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Apologies, I'm a he, not a she, but thank you for that.
My apologies for that. So, Jess, when we are looking at Christmas and being alone during this time of period, and I was asking specifically for people who can't go home, what could possibly be keeping many of the people who your organization is trying to assist in this event, and how long has it been going on?
So I'm originally from Australia, but I've been based in South Africa for 4 years. We all know the COVID pandemic makes it difficult to travel, so it's been over 2 years since I've been able to get back to Australia to visit my family due to travel restrictions and all of the complications that surround COVID-19. However, Johannesburg has become a new home, and so I'm able to spend Christmas in Johannesburg with my community of friends and people I work with.
So is it an event that is for a specific kind of person, or can anyone be a part of it?
So, a Coombe agency is not an event. It's an artist management company. I work with artists like Umsaki, Urban Village, Philani Bubu from South Africa. Mm-hmm. And so during Christmas, I don't run any events, but my artists are performing concerts during the festive season in the Eastern Cape, Msaki, because she's going home to be with her family. So she'll be performing on the 26th and 27th and 28th of December in the Eastern Cape. And Urban Village, who are based in Soweto, are performing tomorrow night at Native Rebels and on Saturday at Brown Sugar. Both shows are in Soweto. So for me, like, there's various concerts and events, but they're not one event.
And it's particularly something that could alleviate some of the loneliness that certain people might feel, because during Christmas and these type of festivities, you may feel that it's a time to stay home. Are there any safety protocols that are being followed so that if anyone was interested in attending any of the events, know that they are indeed followed?
So all of these events are following COVID-19 safety protocols of capacity, no masks, no entry, checking temperature on entry and so on. So the aim is to keep the events as safe as possible so that when we're bringing people together to celebrate the festive season through arts and music, we're still doing it in a safe, responsible manner.
All right. Now, it sounds really exciting. And I particularly know of one event in East London called Buyele Khaya, which is a homecoming event in itself. Would you say that a lot of provinces are able to market it? It's almost a way of celebrating the local artists. Is this something that we could be more aware of and celebrating? Because, like you mentioned, Msaki's from the Eastern Cape. And I think the first time I heard her perform was at my church. How are we then able to support and be aware, and how important is it for us to support local artists, especially their hometowns?
So a lot of artists, due to the nature of the South African music industry, moved to Johannesburg to follow their dreams. And some of them are traveling from the Eastern Cape, like Msaki, others from KZN and various other parts of South Africa. And during the festive time, they like to go home to be with their family, but it also gives them an opportunity to perform concerts in their hometown for their audiences there, who don't get the opportunity to see them as much, seeing as they're now based in Johannesburg.
Do you have any artists who might not be too fortunate enough to perform in their hometowns? How do they deal with those emotions? I remember talking to a friend of mine who was touring overseas. He says it's so difficult to switch off. But when you are busy in dizzying heights and you're around airports and hotels, I can't imagine the kind of emotional and mental strain they go through, especially when they're missing their families.
This time of year can be a very lonely time, and I work with a South African artist called Dope St. Jude. She's a hip-hop artist who's actually based in the UK, and she was planning to come home this December for the first time in 2 years to the Western Cape to see her family and also potentially perform some shows in South Africa. However, with the new variants and the new restrictions, it was not possible for her to leave the UK, which means she'll be spending Christmas in the UK away from family for the third year in a row. So it becomes quite difficult. One of the key ways we work through it by means of being away from our family is to surround ourselves with friends and loved ones that we've brought into our lives in our adopted cities. And that's one of the best ways to ease the loneliness.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite movies is Forrest Gump, and there's a time when his love interest it's one of the loneliest times. It's actually Christmas time, and I think one of the what plays in the background is The House of the Rising Sun, and she's obviously going through a flashback and she's walking over the balcony. It's quite perilous, but it's obviously very dramatized. But I just felt I couldn't imagine, and I tried to do it myself once, just spending time away from my family. So what can a person, let's say, who is stuck somewhere because of work or whatever, take from your artist and the experience and how to manage that level of loneliness? And I think also staying away from any type of dangerous coping mechanisms.
I think the biggest key is a sense of community.
I love that.
Like finding out people who you can spend the day with. I know all around the world, people who are living in their home city, some of them, for various reasons, are not close to their family members, so that they themselves are feeling a loneliness, even though they're not apart from family, they're just estranged because of various reasons. And building a community of friends and work colleagues who are respecting of you as a human being and understand your circumstance and allow you into your space. On Christmas Day, I'll be having lunch with various friends here in Johannesburg who are all South African, but they'll be inviting me into their space so that I have somewhere to be on the day.
Well, no, that sounds like a fantastic plan indeed. And that's been the discussion about having Christmas away from home with Jess White, director and founder of Akum Agency, just giving us a better idea of how their artist management and how he manages his time during this period. Thank you so much for your time, Jess. All the best.
Thank you very much.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
So one of our the questions that we are asking our listeners, if there's anyone you'd like to appreciate with a WhatsApp or an SMS who's been there during a very difficult time, and we might have gotten a new friend, it might be an old friend, it could be a colleague, you never know where that sort of support may come from. Just let us know what that conversation was, and if you'd like to thank them as well on our WhatsApp line on 072-702-1702. You can also call in on 011-883-1702.
Everything's
walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
20 minutes past 6 and we are chatting everything Christmas, including seven colors. If you're not aware of what that might be, we have Speech Nzaumbi, broadcaster, entrepreneur, founder of Mastandi as well. And of course, one of my favorite people that I've never met. Praspish Kunjan.
I'm good. Kunjani, go away.
Cool. Now you
and
sound...
hello to your listeners as well.
Welcome. It's such a treat to have you. And you're, of course, taking a break during this period.
Yes, definitely. Spending it with family. And as you're calling me right now, I'm busy with my last-minute shopping. You know, Christmas shopping, last-minute veggies and all of that.
You can imagine that trolley full of luxuries and quality.
Could
you Woolies. So, Praspeech, you're just such an interesting person and quite gracious as well for taking our interview during this period of time. Can you just tell us a bit more? I'm interested in Mastandi. Of course, your broadcasting career as well is something that is quite interesting. But I want to focus on the entrepreneurial side of things and especially money matters. Can you tell us more about Mastandi? What is it?
So Mastandi is a home convenience business. When the business started, of course, I always tell the story of how it started as, you know, it started as banter on Instagram when I bought property last year in Johannesburg. And, you know, with my Instagram followers, of course, we started talking about what a typical Mastandi. So in the black community, your Mastandi would be your landlord, or in a typical household, it would be the breadwinner. And just, you know, behavior associated with Mastandi and all sorts. And then later on, in a few months' time, it then developed into a full concept. And, you know, I put it together as a concept. Basically what the business is, and that's why we're calling it a home convenience business, is that we want to bring convenience in each and every household in small, little, yet effective ways. So right now, Mastandi is predominantly known for the food part, right?
Okay.
Because food is much more accessible. Food is much more in demand. Everybody wants to have food, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the long term, we want to make sure that we get into other parts of the household, which need attention, and that, you know, most times we don't really have time to pay attention to. So in no time, you're hearing us talking about the Mastandi housekeepers.
Okay.
We're trying to bring opays and make them really accessible to different LSMs in South Africa. And in no time, you're going to hear us talking about property development. We want to transform homes And we want to make sure that what the business basically, that's why it's convenience. We want to make sure that it's convenient to every person. And in the next coming year, what in the food department, what we're going to introduce is a specialized menus for specific households in South Africa, particularly in Johannesburg and Pretoria, right?
Okay.
We want to come and give you free consultation. We want to check your dietary requirements. We want to check what kind of food you enjoy that you might not probably have time to prepare on a daily. So we'll deliver freshly prepared meals to your specific needs on a daily in your household. So after your long Microsoft Teams meetings, which can dread forever, you will know that Nastandi will deliver on your doorstep. So that's basically in a nutshell what the business is about. And like I said, right now, the food part or the food department is really making the airwaves. Yeah.
I love what you've done with the name Nastandi, using something so informal to have such a very impressive and it seems very intricate business model. And it seems as if the food part, which is what we're focusing on the moment, is what is quite popular. I was watching an interview of you on Espresso. Hey, it looked incredible.
So this is what my grandmother taught me. My grandmother taught me that you eat first with your eyes before you actually taste the food. So the preparation of the food, particularly the presentation, is always an area that I'm focusing on. Of course, I improve with time. I learn new trends from different foodies and chefs. Locally, globally, I take from different inspirations as well, culturally and so on. So, yeah, presentation is quite a big part of our business.
And if you've just joined us, we are with Uspeech Nzaumbi. I don't know where to start. He's a broadcaster, entrepreneur, and founder of Nastandi. And today, it's almost as if you have a way of connecting with people. What is something that is non-negotiable? Firstly, let's start with the definition of seven colors for some of our listeners who might not know what or be sure of what that is.
So there's always this debate about whether it's several colors or seven colors. It's seven colors. This is South Africa. Don't tell us about several colors. We don't know that. It is seven colors. And it's basically tradition within, and I always take things within the black household.
Yes.
Because, well, I'm coming from a black household. And it was quite a big thing in my family. Every Sunday, seven colors was a thing. You know, especially, so Sundays, perhaps some Sundays you might alter it. And it took the whole day basically to prepare. But in bigger events, your Easter holidays, your Christmas, oh, you can't miss it. And they're just, you know, misses you can't afford when you're preparing seven colors. But with time, we've also seen that, you know, like I said, food trends have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep on having the same food. Food is creative and food is energy. So you just need to find other ways of preparing it. But yeah, seven colors is basically your traditional meal. In the U.S., they usually have it. Oh, no. Let me not bring the U.S. because that's food. But anyway, we'll not drag the U.S. But usually on your Thanksgiving, you would have your typical rice or starch of your choice, but
yes,
veggies, different veggies. So the reason it's called seven colors is because you really have seven. You must make sure that you have got different colors.
Okay.
And usually, you know, people will say they come up to seven colors. But like I said, with time, it has changed. The tradition of seven colors remains throughout. And we keep seeing new trends each and every year. I mean, who knew that today we'll be talking about creamed spinach?
Right.
Okay? And it has become such a trend. I mean, when it started, there were people who were really disgusted by the idea. Or umngqusho, you know, Sam put out beans with powdered milk. You know, those are things we get to see when people are preparing their starch. But like I said, this Christmas, people can try out different things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, there's so much that one can experiment with.
I love the diversity in the innovation itself. For me, a non-negotiable is the gravy, the meat, and the potato salad. Please don't put the raisins in the potato salad. I can't. There's no need.
There's no need, ne?
To put raisins.
And just like we say, don't put, I mean, the beetroot. Beetroot is one lady that really gets traumatized every Christmas, in every Christmas table. I mean, some people will put a pineapple on it, put banana on it. Why? You know, beetroot is such a simple lady. You just need to make sure that you get a fresh one, peel it. I mean, I had a beetroot salad that I shared. I think it was a year or two ago. And I said, people must stop. I mean, come on, be innovative. that beetroot that we put vinegar on and then it messes up your entire seven colors plate, you know, is really...
It colonizes the entire plate.
It colonizes the entire plate. Like, it really, really colonizes it. So there are different ways to prepare it. You can simply take your beetroot, dice it. Like I said, peel it, dice it into small cubes, put it in the oven, drizzle some olive oil, hoi it there for about 20 minutes, put the stove on 120, you know, and then on the side, make sure that you've got your feta cheese and your baby spinach. And then what you can then do after 20 minutes, it will be ready because you want it to have that bit of crunchiness. So what other people will do, just to add a bit of seasoning and taste, they might drizzle a bit of a brown sugar on top before they put it in the oven, right? You take it out, you put it in your serving dish. Before you put it in your serving dish, make sure that you've got your baby spinach leaves, right? And then you put it on top, and then you drizzle some either black pepper, feta cheese. I love the flavored one. But if you prefer your pure feta cheese, and then you just, not too much, just a bit of it, the combination is out of this world. It's beautiful. Also, you can repurpose it the following day, have it as leftovers. You can either put it in a roll or whatever you usually have on Boxing Day. But what I'm trying to say is there are different ways we can prepare this very specific ingredients we always use when we bring seven colors.
That's very true.
2022 or 2021 just need to be creative. Yeah,
of course. And you know, if we want to get a hold of Speech, is an incredible person to follow. As I mentioned, you can follow him at Speech Nzawumbi. That's SPITCHNZAWMBI. And you can also follow all of his exploits. He's quite a great person to follow. He's one of the few, I would say, unproblematic people that I've seen online. Speech, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you once again. Please do be safe.
Thank you. And you caught me in Manfred. I'm on my, you know, my village home. So I'm going to go now. Please, people, last minute shopping. Get your veggies first thing in the morning. Zipelili veg, right?
That's that will be. Thank you so much.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 7:02.
Let's walk the talk.
24 minutes before 7 p.m. And just before we go to our next interview, we're going to be chatting to Masibulele Mkhundla, who's Fitmasi, the runner, lecturer also, and also fitness fanatic and social media influencer, about how not to drop the ball this festive season to all gym fanatics because of what we are eating this December. That's a very difficult and perilous task. And of course, he's up to that challenge, as we saw that he is a fitness and gym fanatic himself, also a lecturer. Interested on that academic side of things as well. And before we go to that interview, just wanted to read you something. You might be familiar with these lines. Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm going to need somebody to lean on. So if you've had that person who's been by your side, don't be shy if you'd like to appreciate them. 2021 is almost over. Who was there for you when you were at your lowest? Why not appreciate that person live on air? Call in or send a voice note. You're welcome to do that on 011-883-0702. I'll repeat that for you. That's 011-883-0702. If you'd like to send through an SMS, you're welcome to do so on 31702. Of course, we are a multi-platform, diverse organization. What does that mean? All those words mean that you can send through a short voice note. Please do keep it clean, 30 to 60 seconds, on 072-702-1702.
Because some journeys are better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Masibulele Mkhundla joins us on the line, and we're talking about eating healthily during this festive period. He is a lecturer, fitness fanatic, and social media influencer. That's quite a lot of roles there, Masi.
Yeah, I think for one person.
Yeah, and I was just looking at the... Of course, I'm a bit of a nerd. So I was looking at the lecturer aspect and where it intertwines with the fitness. Could you let us in on that aspect of your life?
No, in fact, the lecturer part, I'm a public relations practitioner by profession.
Okay.
So I was lucky enough to be in lecturing. But in the fitness for me is just a hobby more than anything.
Okay. Would you say it's a passion as well?
Over the past 2 years, it became a passion. In the beginning, indeed, it was just a hobby.
It's quite a tough task that you've got this evening and we've got lined up for you. When you think about Christmas, and actually, we were talking in our previous interview with Speech about a wonderful beetroot salad. I'm quite hacked because I'm Xhosa and I love meat. So we stuck on the beetroot. It sounded delicious. I was like, I should have asked him for meat as well. What ways can you be accommodated in a black household during this very indulgent time of the year?
Okay. Normally, I say that people should not feel bad about eating, especially during the festive season, because I feel like that's the time we get to be with our families. So you leave your own space to be with other people. So my advice is only simple: that try to eat in small portions, because at the end of the day, you are worrying about your body goals, you are worrying about the body weight. Okay. So it's very important that. When people eat, try to eat in small portions, because mm-hmm. obviously you have your own goals. Another thing that is very important, Gay, is to snack.
Okay.
I believe if fruit is very important, it will make you not to crave all those things. And also don't try to change your diet mm-hmm. just because you're home. When I'm saying change your diet, luckily you're closer. If you eat oats in the morning, stick to that.
Okay.
But because obviously you're worrying about your body weight and your goals and everything.
You teaser, Masi. How do I open the fridge and I'm looking at dumplings, I'm looking at stew? How do I dive into the fruit instead of all of this wonderful?
I know very well, especially in December. You're going to open this meat, there's everything. But what is important is, are you not going to cry in January when you go back? When you look into the mirror, I went home for a week and the next thing, all my jeans don't fit. So I think it's very important to be mindful of your diet as well. Yes, it's December. Do eat, do enjoy the food, but be mindful. Snack and small portions are very important.
Let's talk about snacks, because you know the internet is quite a marvel. And one thing that I've noticed is that too much, what do they call it? Is it fructose? But too much fruit can also be, too much of anything can be an issue. And the sugary aspect of the fruit that we consume seems to be an issue. Are you aware of any of these kind of discussions?
Yes. In fact, I'm following one of the sugar people on Twitter. I'm sure you guys know about him, Dr. Sam. Mm-hmm. Who preaches that people should not eat sugar for 90 days. Yes, fruit does have sugar, but certain fruits do have sugar, not all of them.
Okay.
For example, people would suggest that stick to apples, do bananas instead of grapes, do peach, do watermelon. So eat snack, sometimes it can also be doing your smoothie, you know. You know that you have your smoothie. The minute you feel hungry, you just grab your smoothie. They always there. So those are the kind of things here that we're talking about. But I think during festive season, it's very important that you try and minimize your food intake, because this is the time when you get to be exposed to all the type of meat, all the type of your choice of sausage, all the biscuits, all the cakes and mm-hmm. stuff. But try to stick to one thing and be like, you know what, I'll do the fruit instead of the pudding. You get my point?
Yes.
Because there is a fruit most for the dessert. You get it? So I think it's just basically about being mindful of what you eat and how much you take.
And planning also is something that I've heard quite a lot in the fitness industry, because if you don't plan your diet, you end up eating and grabbing everything, especially when you are hungry. How do you make sure that you plan adequately, and when you're at home, you move towards a much more planned diet? It just seems almost like a headache to think that you're actually planning for festive eating during December. But the advantages seem to be there.
Yeah, especially at home where people are going to feel like I upatamine, you know, why, you know. But I think this thing, it goes with also having a plan of your training.
Okay.
It's very important. The minute you plan to train during festive season, it's going to be easier even to adapt to that festive season diet. For example, myself, tomorrow I'm surprised it's raining this side. Tomorrow I'm planning to run 31 kilometers. it's December and people are wondering, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. It's only because I'm trying to minimize that thing of we're on holidays, so I need to forget about gym, I need to forget about running. So your planning should also include the training. Because you're going home, don't leave your skipping rope. If you had a routine that in the morning you do a skipping rope for 30 minutes, include that. The minute your mindset, you don't change your mindset about your training routine, or you know that, you know, now I'm going home, there's no gym at home, mm-hmm. or I don't have a membership in that gym, then it's going to be easier for you when you know that you have a plan of your home workout. It's going to be easier even to stick to whatever diet that you adopt during this festive season.
How important is it to get the support, especially from the family? Like you mentioned, people can feel some type of way when you almost are eating differently from them. What kind of discussion can you have and conversation can you have with your family so that they understand that you're not judging them, looking down upon them? Where do you start that conversation so that they don't feel judged when they are eating their luxurious meals and they don't feel that you are almost looking down on them?
I think, let me refer to myself, what I normally do. I think on my side, it's very important to involve your family as well into your planning. For example, if you plan to do a jog in the morning, don't exclude them. Ask them, can you go for a jog? The minute you ask them to be part of ET, they're going to be in support of it. In terms of when you're coming back from a jog, everyone is going to feel guilty of, guys, we cannot be eating a maguinya, yet we went for a jog in the morning. And in accommodating them, you can also, for example, say, no, we're going for a walk today, because you know that most, maybe some of them, they are not into fitness, or they are not into healthy lifestyle. So you can invite them to walk. Try to make them understand the lifestyle that you are living. That, I think that is very important. Because even at home, when they when Kupaka, for example, mm-hmm. they will tell you, I need ampageli papa, mosinyamas, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're not saying that out of they feel like you undermine them. But because you have taught them, or you have showed them the kind of lifestyle that you live, or that you are, or whatever lifestyle that you have adopted for that particular festive season. So I think it's very important that you involve your family. When you do your smoothies, let them try your smoothies. You okay. get me? They will know. They will understand. And eventually, I know, eventually they will join you, because I used to do these runs, these December runs at home alone. Funny story. My brother used to take me to Mtata for my runs every morning, maybe on the 24th. Okay. He used to accompany me, But for the past 2 years, we've been doing these races together. So it's now he's a runner. He has like your 42 kilometers, like your marathon. And I had an influence on that, because I used to wake him up in the morning and be like, you need to accompany me, because I'm doing 16 kilometers in Mtata from Ngaleni, of course. You need to accompany me. I'm doing these kilometers. And he saw my lifestyle. He got bored of accompanying me, and then he joined me. So I think that the lifestyle that the minute you speak to your family or you talk to them, it becomes easier for them to even join and be part of the healthier lifestyle. I think that that is something that is very, very important.
That is Masibulele Mkhundla, or Fitmasi, the runner, who was also a fitness fanatic and social media influencer, telling us how not to drop the ball this festive season if you are a gym fanatic and you'd like to make sure. I think some of the things that came out were planning, involving your family, and just open communication. Masi, thank you so much. Please do be safe on those roads and enjoy your break.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and thank you so much to you too.
702.
SMS us now on 31702.
Of course, the end of the year also comes with reflection when it comes to the song of the year and albums of the year as well. I think a lot of the music that we've had has been quite a treat, dominated personally, I feel, by Amapiano. Amapiano is something that is quite popular. It's taken and transported South African music and South African culture to the next level. But there are many other genres. It's not just Amapiano. And Percy Mabandu is going to join us in a bit, and he'll tell us what his hit list was for 2021. Of course, he's well I think he's well qualified to do so because he's a senior artist specialist at Aspire Art Auctions, author and jazz artist. That's quite a lot. And of course, Percy, these qualifications give you the free rein to tell us exactly what our families and we should be enjoying this Christmas. Good evening and thank you for joining us.
What's up?
Klegas.
Klegas, are you well?
I'm very, very well, and we're excited. And Percy, I don't want to cut you short, and we don't have too much time. I hope we can get through your hit list and why exactly you have chosen. Do you want to start at the bottom?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think there has been a great deal of music that came out this year that we should be really grateful for. Remember, these are extraordinary times. So music then has to do multiple things, not only entertain us, but sort of, you know, do that thing of lifting us up out of the funk, as it were. It's been a very hectic couple of years. No one is coming out of this thing unscathed, right? And music is able to speak to the human condition with a very unique specificity that nothing else can do. The reason why we get vague when we try to describe music, what fails is language, you know, it's not the music. The music is able to say things about the human condition that nothing else is able to do or say in that way. So we give thanks to the musicians who braved the winter of our years, as it were. You know, it's been a very long winter that started in 2020 with this COVID thing, and it continues. We are now in the middle of a fourth wave. People are losing loved ones, and so they're looking for something that does, you know, that soothes the soul and give them a kind of solace. You know, nothing stronger than song, nothing more powerful than poetry, they say. So, you know, in thinking about what kind of music one would sort of invoke into this moment, it's a festive season, but it's a very weird festive season because we almost all know somebody that's battling COVID or has lost a loved one or have ourselves lost a loved one. So the music then that I've thought of edges towards the spirituals, you know, but secular spirituals, as it were. I'm thinking here about a band like Iphupho Likadiko, Biko's Dream. They've got this song, man, Uthixo Ukhona, Majita. I don't know if you've heard this song.
Yes.
It came out early in the year. I think it's you know, those of us who grew up in student politics, you know Umzabalazo in that sense. There's something wonderful about that kind of singing. You know, Amakucho, as they say.
So, is that number at number? What number is that? Are you putting at it?
Yeah, I'm starting it at the bottom.
Okay.
It's unfair. Look, I mean, one of the weirdest things that I've had to do here is select tracks. And then want to rank them. So this is the order that I'm working with here is not the order that says this is better than that, but that it's a number, you know, it's a number that we're starting with. So Iphupho Likadiko is a fascinating band for me because they are reaching into those kind of politics that have brought us where we are as a people collectively, but they're also fun and they are young, and there's that kind of spirituality that's there, but it's a secular kind of spirituality that is, you know, the ANC likes to talk about this thing called the broad church. So Iphupho Likadiko does that thing for me, and I think it's something to pay homage to the times with. Look, and then there's this album, which is a very tricky album. It came out on, you know, it was released early in January this year. It's called Indaba Is. Now, it's a compilation of various songs. This album is called Indaba Is. It was produced by a label called Brownswood Recordings. I would urge everybody who loves South African music in any way or form to try and get a hold of this record, man. It's a really, 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 really hit record. It features a number of tracks that I think will take up much of, you know, the next sort of the next positioning.
Okay. I've got it actually. Indaba Is, it includes Bokani Daya and the Brother
Bokani
Moves
Daya,
On.
Wow. Kinako.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Kinako is. So what I enjoy, the first time I heard this record is just the production values. The quality of musicianship that has gone into it is incredible.
Oh, he's a quality artist.
Yeah, it's hard to find you know, a tune on that record that doesn't work. All right. Oh. So then you've got Kinako by Bokani himself, which is on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and then you've got Umdali by Sibusile Tlhaba, Naftali. Now, Sibusile Tlhaba is a guitarist who, you know, studied in and around Pretoria. So there's something in the water in Pretoria, as you know, apart from the fact that, you know, our special team Sundowns manages to wallop the Soweto teams always without fail. You know, there's something in the water. There's a heritage of music here that we call Malombo music.
Okay.
And it finds expression, you know, in its earliest permutation through the work of Philip Tabani and Malombo, you know, jazz makers, which, you know, and various other bands has taken on that responsibility or that heritage, as it were. The latest, I would argue, you know, there's Azam Paho, who I'll mention a bit later,
mm-hmm.
with songs of Mapungubwe, and then there's Sibusile Tlhaba. You know, Sibusile Tlhaba is a guitarist, so he's in that vein of Philip Tabani in the way he approaches it. But so he understands how he needs to drink into, you know, his music juices from what we call Maskandi and Batanga, but for a generation for a Twitter age generation, as it were.
Interesting.
And I think he's a virtuoso guitarist. He's a fantastic music thinker. So, you know, as a composer, he's unparalleled. We have to be paying attention there.
Yes.
So the sensitivity that he brings to the song Umdali, you know, also sort of reaching towards that kind of spiritual, but a spiritualism that's rooted in the natural, as it were, you know, the green and the earth, as it were. So you want to check that out. It's in that album. And the brother moves on, you know, with Mthandazo, you know, Wamakenge also are doing interesting things there, and along with Thandi Mthuli Sikeledi. So this album, I think, Indaba is something to check out. And I can't stress it enough. Right, that you got to do that. Then I've got a series of solo jazz records. So one thing about the COVID moment is that because musicians could not go out and gig, you know, or go out and meet with fellow musicians to record and so on, what we've seen them doing is that finding interesting and clever ways to beat that the restrictions of the COVID moment, but to remain, you know, dutiful to the people and the way in which they become creative. And what we saw then is a series of really, really important jazz solo piano records that came out. Amongst them is, you know, Kyle Shepherd, who gave us a record called After the Night, the Day Will Surely Come. You want to go check that out. It's a solo piano jazz record. And I think if you're going through some kind of blues, you want to go into this record.
No, it sounds like it. The title itself is very symbolic of
and
the
you'll
content.
Find that you'll find that it's an important record.
Okay.
To check out. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen, but
no, I'm scribbling furiously at the moment. I want to impress my elders. Can you tell us more?
So that's the record to get, right? Look, I mean, I wrote liner notes to this record, so maybe I'm biased, but I did that because I thought when I first heard this record that it's an important record that you need to really check out. And I can imagine, you know, if you're thinking about sending me a Malobolo sometime next year, it'll do well for you, you know. And another record then that we have to check out is another solo piano record, as I was saying, called Beyond the Stars. It's by Bekim Seleku, the posthumous record. You know, Bekim Seleku died years ago, but this record was only released very recently in the last couple of months, you know, along with these other solo piano records. And I think it's one of those that you really want to check out. If you understand the importance of the, you know, there's a landmass that stretches all the way from Northern KZN down the coastline until Cape Town, and the way in which it shapes pianists in the country in a very special way. It may be because of the availability of pianos in the mission schools, but we have a heritage of piano from the Cape all the way up to Northern KZN that is unparalleled else, you know, in the world. I mean, Bekim Seleku, you know, Themba Mkhize, along with Africa Mkhize, his son, you know, all the way down to the south with people like Kyle Shepard and Abdullah Ibrahim and so on, you know. And of course, you can you know, put together a whole roll call of great musicians just on piano in our coastline. But that's a story for another day. So you want to go check out that thing.
Yeah, we've just got literally 30 seconds left.
The old man himself, Abdullah Ibrahim, just released a solo record called Solitude. Solitude is a record that came that he recorded last year, but released just last month. That record, so every year Abdullah Ibrahim goes to the south of Germany to go celebrate his birthday on the 9th of October. But that last year, because there were no crowds, he decided to do the same thing, go into the same venue to play solo piano, but this time record that solo piano. And this is a result of that meditation.
Percy, we just
want to go check it out.
As we just heard, and our listeners heard as well, you have a mountain of information, and we really appreciate officiandos like you. Percy Mabando is a senior art specialist at Aspire Art Auctions, author and jazz artist. Thank you so much once again, Percy. Please do be safe. We'll make sure to share all those details on the podcast.
702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DSTV channel 856.
It's 5 minutes past seven. Welcome to the second hour of the Advice Show with Wasanga Meana. And we've been talking everything about Christmas, including spending Christmas away from home. That was with Jess White, as well as seven colors and what kind of food you can try out this Christmas with Spitch Nzaumbi. And he gave us a lovely, I think, recipe for beetroot. Doesn't have to be too much. Keep the feta there. Keep it simple. And I wasn't actually expecting that conversation with Percy Mabandu, talking about the top songs, hits and misses. I was looking for the generic hit list that you may hear on your radio. But of course, we have people of substance like Percy Mabandu, who is a senior art specialist at Aspire Art Auctions, gave us wonderful artists. I even know some of these artists because I do love jazz. I'm a bit of an old soul when it comes to that. He mentioned some of my favorite bands as well. The Brother Moves On, Umdali by Sibusile Xabi. I've never heard of him, but he talked about the Malombo music that comes from that side, including Abo Philip Dabane, the history in which he went to with the solo pianist Solitude. You can check out that album. And also Themba Mkhize, he mentioned some other artists, Obeki Mseleku as well, when he was talking about those piano solos as well. I was quite enthused. And one album that you can check out is Indaba Is. That includes the likes of Abo Bukani Daya. Another question we've been asking our listeners is whether or not you have anyone who has supported you, who has helped you during the difficult time of period. They may know, they may not know. I know a lot of people have lost loved ones. Accountability partners when it comes to death is something that I've noticed that is quite important. How we can be a bit more sensitive and help out as well when it comes to death within friends or families in a tangible manner, you know, not just the message out there. We've got some listeners who have also sent through their voice notes relating to anyone. And if you do know anyone who's helped you, be it a brother, a sister, a friend or mother, or even a colleague, you're welcome to do so. It's that time of the year where the year is almost done. So if you'd like to appreciate that person on air, you can call in on 011-883-0702. Your SMSs are welcome on 31702 or WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, so we'll be going straight into our discussion with Dr. Divine Fu, who's a social anthropologist and director at the Humor Institute. Dr. Fu, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, and good evening to you and your listeners.
Yeah, so just starting with the origins of Christmas itself, it tends to be a contentious issue for various reasons. But if we're talking about the origins of Christmas, I was actually watching a clip of a child asking Alexa whether reindeers can fly. It ruined the whole aspect of it. But from an academic point of view, can you let us in a bit more about the history of Father Christmas and Christmas itself?
Yeah, so thank you very much. I should first start by saying that I'm not a historian of Christmas. Also, not a historian, but a social anthropologist. And the concept of an academic interpretation of Christmas is very interesting, because this is a kind of an everyday celebration that we have. So, secondly, there is no single history of Christmas, as you have indicated. There are many histories of Christmas. So it depends on where you come from, how you look at it, whether you're Christian, whether you're interpreting it according to Germanic mythology, or whether you're interpreting it according to, secular ideas. But Christmas celebrations can be traced as far back as the 4th century. Wow. I like to say that it is deeply embedded in Eurocentric patriarchy, that the very idea, of having this benevolent a figure, who goes around distributing gifts, or also in all practices, of celebrations and festivities. Some histories link it, to especially celebrations of the summer solstice. Yes. But ultimately, it is celebrating the birth of Christ in Bethlehem, in Jerusalem.
So some of the common aspects around Christmas are the music, the decorations, and the food. Can you take us through those various aspects? And of course, we know from a marketing aspect that it's almost exploitive to a certain extent. Starting when you see the Christmas lights going on in October, you're like, what's going on there?
Yes, as you know, every time something passes through a place where commerce, business, and what I would say capitalism is at its best, it often ends up, being commercialized. But Christmas is one of those things that I think is very hybrid. Mm-hmm. Because it borrows a lot from many different traditions and many different customs as it travels, from one place to the other. But the history tells us that once a Christmas had found itself in the U.S., then it became commercialized, and as associated not just with gift giving, but corporations and many other business entities, took advantage of this, to make it a time, to sell and to market, and to entice people. We live in a world where desires are quite deep. We desire lots of things. So festivities are always about eating, drinking. We like to also say that tradition, for example, what we call tradition, if you're going to do a ritual somewhere, it's always about eating and drinking. When you say you have to pay a fine in a cultural context, you're going to either slaughter a cow or slaughter a goat, people have to eat and dance and celebrate in order for any ritual or festival to happen. So it's not surprising that borrowing from different customs and different traditions, yes, of festivities, like the summer solstice, celebrating the summer solstice, or winter in Europe, that celebrations became part of it, and also that in many parts of the world, this period already marked a transition from one cycle of the year to another cycle, or cycle of harvest to another cycle, that dancing and music and eating also became part of it.
Dancing, music, and eating, a very important exercise. And gifting itself, as I mentioned, just to correct myself there, the marketing aspect of it can be exploitative. If you're looking at Christmas trees in October, you might be a bit more wary about it. But outside of the marketing aspect of gift giving, could you give us maybe some purposes and reasons behind what gifting means in various communities when it comes to this time of period, and how it can be positive or how it can be negative? Because I think it's a cathartic experience where you share something special with another person, be it a stranger, family, or colleague.
Yes, it becomes symbolic of a time of union, a time of sharing, a time of caring. And again, I'm going to referring to what I said were different histories instead of a single history or different meanings of it. So the story of gifting in some accounts can be traced back to Santa Claus,
yes,
who was the patron saint of children. We come from St. Nicholas, the patron saint of children, who was really known for having disposed of his wealth, you know, to go around what was considered as the world at that time, because, I mean, we didn't form part of the world. There was this this end to go around the world, you know, to distribute gifts, you know, to children. And also people who had really done well and performed well. You can still see some of these practices in the controversial celebration of St. Nicholas in Holland, like in Holland and in Belgium, where, you know, the blackface has become quite a controversial issue. So this gift giving, I talk about. This is like the democratization of Eurocentric patriarchy, because quite often when
Dr. Fu, sorry not to cut you short. There's so many intricacies that I want to dissect, but we just need to take a break quickly. I want to come back to gifting and that very complex sentence that you were breaking down for us. If you just joined us, we are with Dr. Divine Fu, social anthropologist, and also he is a director at the Humor Institute for Humanities in Africa at the University of Cape Town. We'll catch up again. We're talking about history of Father Christmas, from decorations, music, and the hype around spending.
702.
SMS us now on 31702.
18 minutes past 7. If you've just joined us, we are with Dr. Divine Fu on the second half of our discussion. He's a social anthropologist and director of HUMA. We're talking about the origins of Christmas, and exactly, I think we left off with regards to gifting, Doctor, and the meaning behind gifting, the purpose of it, and its effects on society. And when I'm looking at children, it almost seems like a social control mechanism.
It is. I mean, it is. That's why I was talking about referring to it as the democratization of the democratization of Eurocentric patriarchy, in the sense that the patriarch was a benevolent, somebody who gifted away. And the fact that Christmas is represented in a patriarch is not surprising. And an old man, you know, who of course was St. Nicholas, who was bishop, you know, in Greece. But that thing has come to symbolize what it is. So when we gift, we are also reproducing that act, which is an act of caring.
Okay.
But also, I mean, Christians will interpret it also quite differently, because Christmas is also the gift of Christ.
Yes.
Christmas is also the gift of salvation. So when one gives, one is also it embodied in that gift that one shares, because it's the gift of being saved, it's the gift of salvation. So it just depends on how you interpret it. But at the end of the day, whatever version of history that you relate, or symbolism that you relate to, what is embodied all is that you activate humanity. You activate humanism. Mm. You remind yourself. You renew your vow with the human every time you do a gift to others, even though it's become, you know, a control mechanism. But it's about love that you share, you know, to other people.
I love that aspect of renewing humanity through something that started off, because the explanation behind it is quite clinical, and you talk about it being Eurocentric and patriarchal. Those can be seen as negative. We've seen the negative aspects of it. But then it becomes a bit more diverse, as you've mentioned, that it's evolved to reigniting that link and connection to humanity. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yes, you know, at the end of the year, so much has gone on, and we become tired, you know, towards the end of the year. And it is important that in spite of the difficulties that we have, that we remind ourselves that why we're here is also because we're human, you know.
Yes.
You're renewing a relationship with so many different things. In passing on that gift, you're also saying thank you, you know.
Mm.
Thank you for being there. Thank you for having shared this journey with me. Thank you for having been around. You're renewing with family. You're renewing with your children, despite the fact that it has become one of the highest, you know, remunerating points of capital, you know. I mean, the South African economy, for example, yes, in December, if you see what it does, what Christmas does to the South African economy and many other economies mm-hmm. around the world, you'll be surprised.
You know? You talked about the rituals that happen when it comes to Christmas itself. We've mentioned the various ways in which people gift, and that's one aspect of a ritual that happens. Can you tell us about how rituals come to pass, especially this one, which everyone seems to be a part of, and the difference between religion and a ritual that becomes ritualistic? I know some religions started off as cults and then they ended up becoming actual mm-hmm. religions. Can you just give us mm-hmm. an idea of how this ritual, the differences between that and how it's been adopted across the world?
Ooh, that's a tough one. So because there's just so much, because you have to link it up. I mean, like when I started off, I spoke about different histories, and those rituals are in different histories. So Christmas, as we commemorate it today, is the product of having passed through the UK and then landed in the US and then took a form that got exported to the rest of the world, in which certain things got recentered, like the Christmas tree, you know, like Santa Claus, yes, and many of those things. But there are many other rituals that have been there. The fact that you have the Christmas tree, for example, that you light, you know, yes, and you have, you know, you go back to the Germanic folktales and mythology, and that's something that came from Germany. You have Santa Claus and the idea of riding a deer, you know, or coming down the evening, you know, to make gifts, you know, to children, and then you have now wrapping gifts that have become a ritual. You have people, yes, sitting, others who must celebrate in a family in the eve of the birth of Bethlehem. You have others who is going to church, you know, yes, having to pray. You have in so many other places where you have to go to the to watch the nativity act. You have others who have to move around from door to door, you know, to distribute, you know, gifts. So there are lots of different rituals, but as it passes across the world, it gets refined, you know, from the idea of who Santa is and the gift giving is, from the introduction of trees, like the pine tree and the, yes, Christmas tree. And then you have, at some point, it was candles, and then lit, I think, in London. And then when it then moved on the discovery of light, then it became Christmas lights. And we can't have a tree without Christmas light. And then we have Advent, you know, calendars that people have before, you know, Christmas. And then you have others who celebrate the 12 days of Christmas. So there's so many rituals, and as they pass from one place to the other, they take on different form. You know, in some parts of West Africa, for example, you have children who will move from door to door with a masquerade big, asking for money, you know. So it takes lots of forms. But what remains, again, is sharing love, laughter, and caring.
Why is Christmas so easy to consume? It has a lot of social capital across the world, and if you look at it, so many different aspects of it that you mentioned. Is it because of the stratification of the elements, such as decorations, music, eating, and then the marketing is where I keep getting stuck on? It's well marketed, so I guess it has an easy introduction into many social environments. Why is it so easy to consume?
I think we have to go back to the importance of festivals in every cultural context. Festivals are very important. At the end of every year, or at the end of harvest seasons, or the beginning of new seasons, or celebrating the sun, festivals are very important. And as some scholars have indicated, they are an opportunity for a society to breathe and to heal, you know, and to continue. So I think the fact that many places had festivals made it quite easy, and had festivals during that time, winter across, you know, northern hemisphere, and also down here, we can also see that there are lots of either initiation or other rituals that are happening across different parts of the continent during that time. So it was easy to adapt. And I also think that the idea of the birth of a child, I mean, when a child is born,
yes,
quite often, even when there's a lot of tension in families or in context of that birth, sometimes it also brings joy, you know? And the story of the nativity is also a kind of story that is ensnaring. But also, we are people of desires and imagination. The way we free ourselves, I often say, is to orient ourselves towards the thing that we think is problematic and to have access to some of those privileges. So not necessarily take them away, but to have access. So it's easy to consume. We want the best and the best of everything every time. So if today you brought me a mango, I'm hoping that next year you bring me a car.
Yes.
Yeah,
in terms of the social cohesion that it creates, because one of the biggest aspects of Christmas and this time of period is the sense of community that it creates. How important is that? Would you encourage, for example, mayors and city planners and town managers to have this event? What effect does it have on a community of people?
So on the one side, I think it's a time for reunion. Especially in our current context, what one might call a modern context or postmodern context, however you refer to that. Because lots of people who are working or have been disrupted or destabilized by capital are able to come back home also because of capital again.
Yes.
So you have lots of villages, rural areas and others where people actually come back. It's a time to return. And then you have families also where it's a time for family to have family reunions and they come back and they share. But let's not forget also that it's a time of lots of tensions. There are lots of separations, lots of divorces, lots of murders, because it's one of the only time in a year where families do come together. It's also a time for loneliness because when we orient ourselves towards what we seem to define as family, we forget that there are lots of people for whom family is very problematic. Family can be abused, you know. Family either does not exist, people who live on the street or people who live alone. So what states and also municipalities need to do is to find ways, you know, of catering for all these other cohorts. How do we ensure that we create celebrations that allow for people who are disconnected from what we see families to also share this sharing and this love?
No, absolutely love that description. And talking of, and thank you so much for your time, Dr. Divine Fu, social anthropologist and director of Huma Institute for Humanities in Africa at the University of Cape Town, talking about the history of Father Christmas from decorations, music, and the hype around spending. It's been a pleasure, Doctor, and thank you for your time again.
Thank you very much, and have a lovely evening, and Merry Christmas to you, and happy season.
Yeah, that's the discussion with Dr. Fu, talking about everything Christmas. So we've dissected from an academic point of view, from music, if you're trying to impress your elders as well. We'll be back with a very special interview with SAMA Award-winning artist Uperita, telling us about her homecoming this December 28th.
702. WhatsApp us on 072-702-1702.
Hi, good evening, Wasanga. Thanks for what a great show indeed. Yeah, I would love to say thank you very much for a certain person who have helped me a lot. Her name is Theo and then Motalipula Mirafi. You know, what's a wonderful help that he helped me with during even the COVID-19 from last year. You know, I just want to say thank you very, very, very much. And you know, Merry Christmas and wonderful Happy New Year. God bless you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It is a time of reflection and gratitude. We're asking our listeners, if you've just joined us, about anyone who has been there for you when you were at your lowest. And you can appreciate them on our open line, 011-883-0702, or like our listener who just sent through that heartwarming message of gratitude to 072-702-1702.
Because some journeys are better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
So we've got a very special artist with us. I mentioned her name. She's a SAMA award-winning artist and singer. She's got a very interesting event that is coming up called The Real Homecoming on the 28th of December. It's a difficult time for artists as well. And we're just going to play you an intro of one of my favorite songs from her before we get into the interview. What a beautiful and sad song. Perita, thank you for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, Perita. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well.
Those
I'm in the festive spirit.
Yeah, actually, for our listeners, Perita was jogging when we're trying to get a hold of her. How was your jog?
I apologize. I took a walk. You know, sometimes you sit in the house and you're on your phone the whole day. I'm like, no, man, let me take a walk. I actually spent the afternoon watching a documentary by Nina Simone.
Wow.
It was really heavy. So once I finished it, I'm like, let me take a walk. I forgot that I had a date with you on 702. Hello, Wasango. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. And you mentioned one of my favorite artists, Mama Nina Simone. What an incredible artist. And you, of course, are on your own. You are incredible as you stand. And you are, you described as your stage name, Perita, obviously, Zimbabwean-born singer, songwriter, and music producer. Why is it Xhosa specifically? And I'm absolutely excited because I know how beautiful my language is, and the way in which that song conveys so much beauty, so much tragedy, and so much pain. It leaves questions lingering, and does so many things. I'm a hopeless romantic, so that's why that song particularly it really resonates with me.
Yes, thank you. You know, my journey, you asked why is it Xhosa? My journey to isiXhosa began in Bulawayo. I'm Ndebele.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Ndebele, isiZulu, isiXhosa, isiSwati. Those are all languages that are interlinked because we are the same people, we are the Nguni people.
Yes.
So I was born and bred in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. I grew up speaking isiNdebele. I discovered isiXhosa only later on. 9 years ago when I came to study in the Eastern Cape and secretly to pursue music. And I consider myself an adopted child of the Eastern Cape.
The first time I heard of you and I heard you, I was like, "Mkhosa ke la sizwe," and then I found, oh, okay, so I claim our yasazi, anything amazing or beautiful, she's ours.
No, I'm actually very, you know, without denouncing my heritage, you know, I do not denounce my heritage as a Bulawayo Zimbabwean, but I'm also very proud to be adopted Xhosa because that's where I started my music career. And I mean, even when I think of Xhosa singers and songwriters, there's royalty there. I mean, Thandiswa Mazwai, Ringo,
yes.
Zahara, Nati, Amifako, young and old, you know, there's just Simpiwe Dana, Zonke. I mean, the list goes on. So to be a part of that heritage of Xhosa singers, and to also hold dearly to who I truly am, you know, from Bulawayo and Zimbabwean, I think I've married that well, and I think I allow both, both, I guess, to claim me.
Mm-hmm. No, I guess there is that. We've got so much love for Zimbabwean artists, and we can mention Utatu Oliver Mtugudzi and many others.
Whom I worked with.
And many others that have come up, even younger artists as well. Can you take us through your musical experience, and what was the discussion when you said to your parents, hey, I want to do this music thing?
You know, I very much picked up music later in life, so I only started playing guitar and singing in my late teenage years. So my parents didn't know what to make of it. They're like, this is clearly not a phase because umdala ngoku, you know. But I picked up so strongly and I resonated with soul music. I'd grown up listening to Brenda Fassie, Oliver Mtukuti, Yvonne Chaka Chaka. I grew up listening to a lot of South African music, vele, and a taste as well of Zimbabwean music, mostly Afro pop, jazz music as well.
Yes.
So when I grew up in my teenage years, I was then very interested in soul music, or Jill Scott, or Erykah Badu. You know, I resonated with how they expressed themselves, and that's what I wanted to do.
How would you describe your music style? You've mentioned quite an eclectic list from Jill Scott to Oliver Mtukudzi to Brenda Fassie.
Yeah.
How would you describe Berita to someone who hasn't, or maybe who's been living under a rock?
Well, you know, I would really say at heart I'm a singer-songwriter, a soul singer-songwriter. I guess my sound is quite rooted in Afro, you know, African music in terms of African languages, sometimes African rhythms. But I'm also very influenced by pop music, guitar pop music, such as Ed Sheeran as well.
Oh.
So my music tends to be quite melodic and quite pop, but still rooted in African, you know, African ubuntu.
I love that. Yeah. What has been your toughest lesson in your journey, and what would you tell your younger self at that point?
Wow. I think I would say believe in yourself. I think we live in a very difficult time, but also our industry and, you know, show business, music industry is quite difficult. And no one really knows what is going to make it, what is not going to make it, you know. So it's so important for you to believe in yourself. Sometimes you can come in believing in yourself and then you lose it somewhere. Sometimes you get discouraged. Sometimes you get disappointed. And I think I look back, I'm almost 10 years in the industry. I'm celebrating my 10th year next year. And
wow.
You know, I just completed the first leg of my tour, you know, playing concerts, Cape Town, Pretoria, Gqeberha, Johannesburg, those are cities I was able to play. And I just took the time to reflect and realize that I'm here because I still carry that torch of belief in myself. And I still continue to inquire from my creator as to why am I here? Why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah, I want to talk about the business side of music, as well as the significance of winning awards. Because what we find with a lot of our artists, someone who I've been following for a long time, and he recently got the attention of South Africans when he made it big during that era of GOM, DJ Lag. So he almost did it the other way around, where he got international acclaim, and then all of a sudden South Africans started recognizing him all over the place. And I just want to speak about the importance of the awards themselves, and of course how important it is to get local support, or whether it isn't important to be on the international stage. So if you've just joined us, we are with Berita, who's a SAMA award winning singer and songwriter. We'll have more of this discussion. If you have any questions, SMSs, you're welcome to do so. Right now it's heading up to 15 minutes before 8. We'll be back after the break.
702, let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
It is 14 minutes before 8 p.m. We are with Uperita, Sama Award-winning artist, singer, and songwriter. So, Uperita, we're talking about the business of music. It's not something that is easy to maneuver. We know there have been some talented artists who've ended up as paupers, and a lot of artists are also looking at becoming independent from managers. What would you say is the importance, or maybe some red flags, when it comes to having a manager? Is it a necessity this day and age?
Definitely. I mean, you need a team. You need to partner. I see everyone that is in your team as your partner. So it really depends on obviously where in your journey are you. I would say that, you know, when you're still starting out, count on those that are around you to assist you, because you can't play all the parts. See, the thing is, music is quite different to sports, but they're quite similar. See, in sports, the beautiful thing is that umuntu plays their part.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not very familiar with sports, by the way, to name it. I play tennis for fun, so I would use example, Serena Williams.
Okay.
So what Serena Williams has to do is get on the court and be in the right state of mind, train. She's got trainers, she's got a coach, she's got an entire team of people that are supporting her to be the very best of herself. And her job is to get on that court and deliver. So it's unfortunately similar in music, but in music, when you first start, there is no pathway. Enjalo, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, talent, it takes a long time for talent to be seen as leverage. See, okay. In tennis, for example, Serena Williams, by virtue of the fact that she plays tennis, she's trained at that. That's her leverage. So everyone else comes in knowing that. In music, whoever pays owns. So you find yourself in a situation whereby, for example, you're a young artist, you're coming up, you've got the songs, you've got the music, but when it comes to signing that initial deal,
yes,
if you haven't build some sort of capital. These days, it's much better because it's digital, there's social media.
Yes.
So what's helping a lot of artists is build your social capital first, and then that helps you when you have to sit in the rooms. Because as you can see, for the first time, an artist can make it from anywhere in the world, like Master KG and Nomcebo last year with Jerusalem. So the only way that happens is if you've got a team of people that when they see that there's traction in your work, they're able to you know, make the business deals and do the marketing and the promotions.
Rita, you're a very nice person, and that was a very PR answer. We want to know, how do you segment the paycheck? Because you need to pay for that kind of services, etc. So when there's a manager in place, we're looking at those things now. From that 17-year-old who started playing the guitar, I love what you mentioned, and you said that it takes a lot of time to leverage talent in music. When I was in New York, every single person who played an instrument or sang or performed was incredibly talented. That's when I understood that statement that talent is not enough. Those people are all insanely good. And I was like, wow, if I was a music producer, I'd definitely sign you. And this is why this statement that you made, it takes a lot of time to leverage talent in music. Having said that, then creating that edge and apportioning that financial aspect of things, how do you afford your team? How do you make sure that you don't get or maybe undercut yourself or have a team that is batch, that is not quality? That quality discussion versus the actual remuneration.
Sure. It's very difficult. I saw a tweet, you know, online the other day that says, you know, someone who's a talent manager and runs an agency was saying, guys, there's a lot of talent in this country. We need more talented managers, business people that can manage this talent because we've got it. So we find that we've come to a point where there's more of an influx of talent than managers. And we need managers because as talent, you know, I've been in the business 9 years. I've had years where I won't say you need to have a manager from the start of your career, because then if you always have a manager, there are certain... You don't know what your contracts look like. There's a lot of things that you need to learn by yourself. So for me, what's worked for me in my journey is that everything that I'm asking anyone else in my team to do, I can do, and I've learned how to do.
Love
but
that.
Now I've paid school fees for that.
Okay.
You know, I've been very also quite fortunate to work in spaces where, for example, my first record deal 2 years ago, I was able to buy back my music from them. It doesn't happen a lot.
Wow.
You know, to be able to put just, again, I had to put myself in a position of leverage. The beautiful thing about this country is that, as you are seeing a lot of young people, this country loves entertainers. Mm-hmm. That's why you see someone like Uncle Waffles, who people didn't know 2 months ago.
Yes.
Now she's the most booked act, because people love to be entertained. They love to be, you know, they love entertainment. So if you're a young person and you can get yourself in a situation whereby you're using social media to your advantage and you're entertaining, you can get to a point where you are actually making the money on a regular basis from bookings, where then you are able to put together a team. And it just works so much better to be able to do that once you're making money, because then you hire and fire people if they're not doing their jobs. So it's difficult to start by having a manager before you start making money, because then the manager has to spend before you become a star. And then when you see that they're not doing the job properly, now it's difficult to fire them, because there's an emotional capital that does not need to be there in the first place.
How do you traverse that very difficult paradigm? Because now you've created these emotional relationships with these people, but the performance is just not there. Would you advise people to work with family or friends?
You know, there are many times where people have worked with their parents or sisters and brothers, and things have actually worked out, you know, like Beyonce and her dad. Sometimes if you've got a family member who has that business acumen and also understands music and understands culture, you know, sometimes that can help, because there's an extra protective layer. But I mean, the most ideal situation, like I'm saying, especially we're living in a much better place. When I first started in music, there was no way that you were a young person that had a studio in their bedroom and were making music. That the technology was simply not there yet, and it wasn't as accessible as it is now. So now, you know, if a parent is listening, or, you know, someone that has a talented person in their family, the beautiful thing is, there's so much you can do with social media and a studio in your bedroom, with TikTok and with Instagram, you know, and really a lot of people are getting their opportunities online. So that puts you in a position where you have leverage. You can say yes, you can say no. You can also, there's a lot of information now more than ever before on YouTube, on Google. There's a lot of information without, you know, and also you can learn. If you go and watch interviews of different artists, that you look up to in terms of what, you know, they're doing in terms of their music and their business, they are always leaving clues here and there.
Berita, just lastly, how important are awards? Like, you are some award-winning artist, and it's a title that I can repeat over and over. Is it something significant? Is it important to win an award for an artist?
Well, the SAMAs are the Grammys of South African music. So I think at one point or another, It is a good thing. It is a commendable thing for you to be acknowledged for your work. I, for one, only received, I have actually been awarded quite a bit by different, you know, different award ceremonies and stuff like that. It's never been something that I go after and sought after. For me, what I truly love is, I love making music. I love performing. That's what I really, really enjoy.
No, it does resonate through your performances. And just to wrap up, with regards to the 28th of December, can you tell us more about the event there, the homecoming, for the real homecoming on the 28th of December? Where can our listeners get a hold of any information, and what can we expect?
Yes. So I'm on tour. It's called Songs in the Key of Love Tour. So I started in Pretoria in November. I did Cape Town, I did Kabeja. Last weekend, you missed out. I did Joburg Theatre. Oh,
man.
But do not worry. So this coming Tuesday on the 28th, I'm going home, Bulawayo. I'm doing the real homecoming. I'm not just alone on this bill. I've got Ubegezela, who's also based here, who's from Bulawayo, and Vusamkaya, who's based in Austria, who's from Bulawayo. So we've come together to create a property which we hope in the future we will even be able to invite musicians from, you know, all around the world to join us to experience Bulawayo. the tour doesn't end in Bulawayo. I'm coming back next year. I've got the 24th of February in Durban at the Suncoast Banya Theatre, and I've also got the 5th of March at the Guild Theatre. So those are the confirmed dates. But again, you can follow me on @BaritaAfrosoul on social media. I'm always coming up with new dates and new concerts.
Thank you so much, Berita, Summer Award-winning singer and songwriter, telling us about her very much anticipated real homecoming tour. All the best, Siswan. Please do be safe.
Thank you.